This is Sports Talk with Phil Kornblut, Chris Bergen, and Pat Daniel. Sports Talk is heard across the state on radio affiliates of the Sports Talk Media Network and is streaming live on sportstalksc.com, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. The South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number to call in is 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now, here are Phil, Chris, and Pat with tonight's edition of Sports Talk.
Welcome in, everybody. Sports Talk Media Network. It's a Friday night. I'm so happy to have you with us. Your best 2 hours of the night about to occur right in front of your very ears. It's the 2 hours you've been waiting for all day long. Sports Talk, South Carolina's sports influencer on the air across the state of South Carolina. And we're fully clothed. We don't need to attract people by declothing like a lot of influencers have to do. All right? If we had a, what's it called, a fans-only site where we would be like, I don't know, can you be partially naked? I've always said you can't be semi-nude. You're either nude or you're not nude. But I guess you could be partially clothed. But we wouldn't do that to you. We wouldn't hurt your eyes that way. We are here to deliver good stuff to your ears, not necessarily to your eyes. You can watch us if you want to. I wouldn't advise it. I would just advise listening to us over the radio and then as a backup, you know, going to the stream to pick us up there if you can't get us over the air. Phil Kornblut, Pat Daniel, and Chris Bergen. Baseball is underway, guys, up at Doug Kingsmore. They moved it up because of weather, of course. If it's a weekend, it's going to rain, right?
It's insane. I mean, it's unbelievable how much bad weather we have had over the weekends. These teams have been fortunate that they haven't missed more games or haven't had to play as many doubleheaders. I guess South Carolina's played plenty.
Yeah.
But Clemson somehow has been able to avoid those for the most part. But, yeah, the weather has not been kind to the baseball teams for sure.
It has not. So Clemson-Louisville moved up to a 4 o'clock start, and it's a 3-3 game as they play the bottom of the seventh. Louisville led early 1-0. Clemson tied it. Then Louisville scored two in the sixth, and Clemson has come back to tie the game with two in the bottom of the sixth. So we have a good one going. Important game, important series for both of these teams because you know, Clemson's looking to stay hot and continue to move up, and Louisville's just trying to right the ship a little bit. They are under 500 in league play and just have had a very average year for them. Amick just homered for Clemson, a two-run shot in the bottom of the sixth, and that has tied this game up at 3-3. On the mound for Clemson today, Darden started, gave him a good start, a quality start, six innings, three earned runs, six strikeouts. He walked two. He hit one. He gave up a home run. Garris is on, and he's gone an inning, and he has struck out one, not allowed a base runner otherwise. South Carolina and Kentucky will be getting underway shortly up in Lexington. This, too, a huge matchup of two top 10, RPI-wise, top five teams. And South Carolina looking to bounce back from a series loss, a surprising home series loss to Auburn. Let's see if they found something this week in practice. They did have a midweek victory. See if they found something. The lineup remains as it has been, so they haven't found any healthy bodies to return to the lineup. It'll be Brewer, Braswell at short, Brewer in center, Braswell at short, Petrie in right, Messina at third, Denny at left, Cassis at first, French behind the plate, Horning DHing, Tippett at second, and Sanders on the mound for the Gamecocks. He'll be facing a lineup that features some good bats. Jackson Gray, the center fielder, he's hitting .362. Hunter Gilliam, the first baseman, .348. Emilian Petre, he is batting .360, second baseman. So they got some bats in that lineup. The starting pitcher for Kentucky will be Travis Smith. He's a right-hander, 3-1. He's worked 31 and a third innings, and he has an ERA of 4.02. And he has allowed 14 earned runs in those 31 and a third innings. He's only given up one home run, Chris, so he's not a guy that you can really take deep, and 29 strikeouts in 31 and a third innings. So sounds to me like a guy that's not necessarily a mid-90s thrower, but a guy that mm-hmm. might have a lot of stuff, a lot of movement on the ball. That's why he's hard to take out of the ballpark.
Well, and I think this is a critically important series for South Carolina for a lot of different reasons, Phil. First off, obviously, trying to bounce back from the surprising, I think you hit it on the head, surprising loss to Auburn last weekend. You got to go out and prove that last weekend was just an aberration and you aren't a team that is wounded and dealing with so many injuries that you can't overcome. Plus, I think it's a situation, what do we know about Will Sanders? I think this is a big start for Will Sanders, too, to try and establish himself back. Is he really South Carolina's Friday night guy? Or if he struggles again tonight against Kentucky, a team, as you pointed out, has some hot bats in that lineup and a Kentucky team that desperately needs a series win themselves. So I'd be curious to watch tonight and see how well Will Sanders pitches and what South Carolina can do to continue to overcome some of those injuries, especially on the infield. And you start wondering, when are they going to get some of these guys back? Keep hearing that LeCroy was close to being ready to come back, and he's not in the lineup tonight. How much longer are they going to be without Will McGinnis? I just think there's a lot of question marks around this team, unfortunately, right now. And this is not the time to have it when you also are staring at the barrel of not just Kentucky this weekend, but going to Arkansas next weekend.
Mm-hmm. And the SEC tournament right around the corner. I mean, mm-hmm. that thing is coming up very quickly. And then also tonight, along with those games that we'll be watching and monitoring, you've got Coastal Carolina at home against Appalachian State and a chance for the Chanticleers. You kind of feel like this is a chance for them to pick up some wins against a team that at least on paper they have an edge against.
I think so. I think this is a series. You go into series just wanting to make sure you win it. I think Coastal should go in and expect to sweep this series, and they need to. This would be a good week after the road series victory against Louisiana, where they had to come from behind in the final game of the weekend and win it in extra innings. Get set up for that big matchup with Clemson next week by sweeping Appalachian State over the weekend. I think the Chanticleers should win this series, should sweep the series, and I think that should be their goal this weekend, to sweep these guys.
Okay, we've got all that to talk about, and also tonight on Friday night we have our normal staples. We'll have Jeff Owens on NASCAR as they go racing in Kansas this weekend. I got to be honest with you, I've never gotten a feel for the Kansas track. I mean, it just seems like it's one of those tracks without a lot of character. Am I wrong about that, or am I missing something about the Kansas track? Is there anything that is outwardly appealing about the Kansas track?
The casino that's next door, don't they have a casino out there as well?
Okay.
That may be the most exciting part of the Kansas track. I think the problem that you and I and a lot of fans here in South Carolina have, it always seems to be slotted right around Darlington week. And so we're so focused on next week that it's pretty easy to overlook this.
Yeah.
So, but this may be one of those tracks where they don't need, they should cut the length of the race down a little bit, make it a little more exciting. But, yeah, I mean, it's your typical sort of, as I was mentioning yesterday when you were talking to Dale Jarrett about the wonderful characteristics of Darlington and what was his favorite turn. I'm not sure you could ask many NASCAR drivers, hey, at Kansas Speedway, which turn do you enjoy the most? I don't know.
Would you?
One, two, they all sound the same, you know.
Would you agree with me that in their haste to spread their sport across the country and attempt to draw more fans from outside their backyard, the Southeast, the owners from the Charlotte side, the owners from the Daytona side, building these tracks, they just threw up some cookie cutter tracks, a lot like Major League Baseball did back in the 70s when all the stadiums were the same, Oakland and St. Louis, all these round stadiums, remember mm-hmm. that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Philadelphia, the Vet, I think.
Pittsburgh.
I mean, they all look the same, right?
Yeah. You could probably throw Atlanta Fulton County Stadium into
yep.
that mix.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were so many that looked exactly the same because that was sort of the design characteristics back then. But yeah, I think NASCAR, it got so popular so quickly, and then the sport in its defense tried to keep up with the popularity, and then realized, hey, wait a minute, the popularity is still down to the Southeast when they expanded. And I think some constriction of racetracks for NASCAR actually probably would work to their advantage.
Looking forward,
not going to happen.
Looking forward though to what they're going to do at North Wilkesboro here coming up.
No doubt.
You know, I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, and then George Brian and Robbie Thames with us, birdies and bogeys and biceps around the state of South Carolina. We'll check out what's going on in Charlotte, but also a couple of special guests, Clemson golf coach Jordan Bird and Furman golf coach Mark Davidson. They're going to join us, and we'll have a fivesome. I'll probably drop out, so it's a foursome, okay? They don't allow fivesomes at most prestigious golf courses. Like, if I were to go to Quail Hollow to try to put five on at one time, I don't think they'd go for that.
You better play fast if that's the case.
Yeah. So I'd probably drop to the wayside and let the four go. But they'll be with us because the women will play next week. They've got their regionals next week. I thought about trying to get the women coaches on from Clemson and from who else we have from the women? It's Clemson's in the women's tournament, and there's another. Oh, South Carolina, of course. Duh.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I figure they're traveling now because Clemson's going out to Washington State to play out in Pulliam, Washington. Is it Pulliam? Pulliam, Washington?
Pullman,
Washington. South Carolina doesn't have as far to travel over to Athens, but they probably are traveling to get some practice rounds in. The women start on Monday, and the men start the following Monday. So we'll catch the ladies should they, either one or both, advance to the finals of the NCAA tournament. We'll try and grab them next week. We'll do the men tonight as they get ready to prepare next week and then head out to their various sites. Well, Clemson is hosting, so it'll be at Clemson. Well, not at Clemson, but up in the mountains there at Kiwi. And Furman is playing in that one as well. So we'll have that tonight as part of a Birdies and Bogeys and Biceps. Otherwise, we can take some phone calls. We'll update recruiting. The USC women looks like they picked up a very nice prospect, a junior college player who started at Rutgers, went to junior college, was the National Junior College Player of the Year, and she's 6'5". So Dawn Staley replenishing the height side of her program because Cardosa is back for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And this gives them another tree and a very good player, apparently. Averaged 16 points and about 8 rebounds a game. National JUCO Player of the Year. Walker's her last name. And so she joins the Gamecocks. She announced that today. So they are not going to get the transfer from DePaul because she might have announced for LSU today.
She has.
She did announce.
Yeah, she absolutely has.
All right, so she was supposed to visit this weekend to South Carolina, I believe, and canceled that and committed to LSU. I tell you what, women's basketball, this rivalry now between South Carolina and LSU is going to go up a couple of notches.
I was thinking about this earlier today when Morrow announced that she was committed to LSU and lining up of LSU, their lineup from top to bottom is going to be as good as anybody's in the country next year. I think they'll be preseason number one, probably should be as the defending champions, but I'm wondering if South Carolina is going to look back at that loss at Iowa and it's going to actually hurt more than we actually thought. Aside from the fact it ended an undefeated run towards the national championship, it basically gave LSU a chance to win a national championship because I think if it's South Carolina and LSU in the finals, Carolina wins that game and they're the national champions. And then you wonder, all right, where are all these recruits that want to go to? Do they continue to play with the dynasty or do they now want to go play with the new shiny toy?
Mm-hmm.
And it appears that LSU and Kim Mulkey, she's building the new shiny toy.
Mm-hmm.
And SEC women's basketball is already competitive enough. And now you add two programs that are at the height of their zenith right now. I tell you what, I think the loss to Iowa may come back to haunt South Carolina more than we thought at the time because they may have lost a recruit or two to LSU because of that.
That's entirely possible. I mean, listen, Kim Mulkey, I mean, she doesn't have, obviously, the playing background and the international background, so to speak, of Dawn Staley from Dawn Staley's playing days, both in college and WNBA and Olympics and all that. But from a coaching standpoint, she's got every bit the reputation of Dawn Staley. And she's got how many rings now? Is that three for her? Didn't she win
four?
That's four
she
for
won
her.
Three at Baylor. Yep.
Three at Baylor, one at LSU. I mean, yeah. So, and LSU's an attractive place. Now, do they have – I don't know how their fans are compared to the South Carolina women's fans. I don't know that they pack the place. Well, I'm not going to say pack the place. I mean, South Carolina doesn't pack the place because it seats 18,000. They do it occasionally, but they will have 12,000, 13,000 mm-hmm. on a given night for an SEC game. I wonder if LSU, you know, in the Press Maravich Center there, I wonder if they draw maybe 8,000, 10,000 maybe. I don't know that they draw like South Carolina does.
According to, what is this, SI.com, I think this is from this past season, they averaged just about 8,600 fans, which was the second highest average attendance in the SEC behind, of course, the Gamecocks. So, I mean, that's a solid attendance, and you would think it's only going up.
Yeah.
Coming off a national championship run. And you know, going back to my point a few moments ago, this is not the downfall of South Carolina. Gamecocks aren't going anywhere.
Mm-mm.
But I think, obviously, with LSU winning a national championship, it has certainly helped vault them into contention now with USC for sure.
Got something, Pat?
Well, just Kim Mulkey has six championships if you include her two in college as a player. While she was at Louisiana Tech, she won the last ever AIAW title in 1981 and the inaugural NCAA women's title in 1982. So you got to think that factors in as well. And now, just looking at this starting five, and this is just four of the five from this upcoming year. You have Angel Reese coming back, 23 points per game, 15 boards. Haley Van Lith, who came over from Louisville, 20 points per game, 5 boards. Anissa Morrow now, 26 points per game, 12 boards. And then I'm gonna butcher her first name, but Flojay Johnson, who was a freshman this past year with 11 points per game, one of the highest sought-after recruits in the country. She's coming back, of course, too. You have all that coming back for them next year. They're loaded.
They are loaded.
Yeah, they are.
But if you look at the other side, you look at South Carolina, and you see that they've got Cardoso coming back, and they've got who they are adding. They've got a really good class coming in with their transfers. They've got the transfer guard coming in from Oregon. Fletcher is back to run the point and compete with the transfer from Oregon to run the point. You got to keep an eye on the young girl who joined the program at midseason last year, who would have been a high school senior last year. Say her name?
Chloe Kitts.
Yeah, her. I mean, mm-hmm. Obviously she's got size. She's got a ton of talent. She was obviously a little bit overmatched, I think, some last year, getting used to the play. If she learns some things and gets more physical and gets stronger, she should be a major contributor. The point is, they got players, too.
Oh, there's
they
no
got
doubt.
Good players, too. So the matchups there with LSU and probably Tennessee and Mississippi State and who else around the SEC? I mean, a handful of others. There's going to be great competition night in and night out.
Ole Miss is coming. I would not doubt them either. They have a great up-and-coming coach in their program, although they lost a couple of their top players from this past season. They've recruited well, and I expect them to take another step forward next year, too.
We're talking women's basketball. We're talking women's basketball. And Clemson has taken a 5-3 lead on Louisville, and they have the bases loaded and nobody out in the bottom of the seventh, and the Tigers getting those two runs after loading the bases. And then Taylor, he got an RBI the old-fashioned way or the hard way. He took one off the body. And then Grice followed up. No, I'm sorry. Taylor walked, and Grice got hit by a pitch. So Taylor walked on a 3-2 pitch, and then Grice got hit on an 0-1 pitch. So two RBIs without putting the bat on the ball. And Tigers take a 5-3 lead. They have the bases loaded, nobody out in the bottom of the seventh. And I imagine, based on how long it's taking for things to update, they might be going through a pitching change there at Doug Kingsmore Stadium.
You know, it's funny you were talking about Louisville and a team that sort of struggled and trying to figure things out, sitting at 9-12 in the ACC. If I'm a college baseball fan somewhere other than in the Southeast or out West, I wonder what in the world is going on with a team like Louisville, who's 29-15, is ranked inside the top 25. I mean, are there not better teams around the country? I understand Louisville plays in a baseball conference, but that shouldn't give them a bump when you're three games below 500 in your own league. Should you be inside the top 25?
The RPI.
Maybe so. I don't know.
And the rankings, hard to figure.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to
it
figure
really is.
There. One more baseball note, then we'll go to a break and we'll get to your phone calls. 888-898-2525 is the phone number. So another story came out today on the situation at Alabama with their baseball team and what happened there. And this story reported that the Alabama former baseball coach, Brad Bohannon, reportedly contacted a former high school baseball coach for the wager that led to his ouster. The contact made a bet April 28th in Ohio's Great American Ballpark Sportsbook shortly before Alabama played LSU. This according to multiple sources who told the Action Network's Darren Rovell. The bet came after Alabama's expected pitcher Luke Holman was benched with a back injury an hour before first pitch. The suspiciously large cash wager was flagged by U.S. Integrity, a third-party monitoring firm, triggering investigations in Ohio and Tuscaloosa. Gambling commissions in Jersey, Pennsylvania, Kansas, and Indiana have halted betting on Alabama baseball and voided all future bets. The Ohio Casino Control Commission told AL.com it's been in contact with the NCAA. Bohannon was fired by Alabama Thursday. ESPN then reported that the OCCC had surveillance video linking the bettor to Bohannon. Multiple reports have claimed that no players had knowledge of the illegal wagering. So somebody, I guess, that he knew, high school coach in his past. Now the question is, was the guy putting down money for Bohannon or for himself? Were they going to split this money?
That's a great question.
You know,
that,
were they
that
working
really is
in
a great
cahoots?
Question.
I guess eventually the truth on that will come out.
They sure didn't look like they were trying to throw a game last night. They dominated Vanderbilt.
Yes, they did. Okay, we'll be back after the break. Don't go away.
Imagine a scrapbook filled with all your favorite memories of 75 years of NASCAR gone by. Now imagine that scrapbook going 190 miles per hour.
Have you ever? No, I've never!
You don't have to imagine it. You need to get to Darlington, where the drivers of today tackle the track too tough to tame, just like they did your first time. NASCAR Throwback Weekend at Darlington Raceway, May 12th through the 14th. Get your tickets today at darlingtonraceway.com.
Parents ask, what's the best way to save for college? I'm State Treasurer Curtis Loftus, and my answer is always open a Future Scholar 529 College Savings Account. It's easy. You can get started online with any amount. It's flexible to adapt your child's college dreams. And you can deduct 100% of your contributions from the South Carolina state tax return. So what are you waiting for? Go to FutureScholar.com and see why it's the smart, easy way to save for college. FutureScholar.com.
Hi, this is Billy Downer from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. Are you looking for a safe place to shoot your rifle or handgun? Did you know that the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources operates four manned ranges across the state in Pickens County, Spartanburg County, Richland County, and Charleston County? For more information on our public ranges, visit dnr.sc.gov/shooting.
Okay, phone number 888-898-2525, South Carolina Education Lottery. Lucky number here on Sports Talk since 2002. More than $999 million in lottery proceeds have been used to support K-12 programs in South Carolina. Learn more about the lottery's impact at sceducationlottery.com/educationwins, and playing for fun is a win for education. Go ahead and start off with Gamecock Larry here. We've got a break coming up. If we have to hold him over, we will. But Gamecock Larry, welcome in, and happy weekend to you. Hello, Larry.
Yeah, yes, sir. You hear me?
Hey, sounds like you're celebrating the 5th.
No, that's not dadgum TV. We're going to Kentucky, and I'll settle for 2 out of 3. But a sweep sure would look good. Now, let me tell you something about this Alabama situation. I ain't stupid. I'm an old guy. But they was going to think seriously about firing Bohannon at the end of the year. I darn dadgum take you, if he'd have had a team, as high up as the standings and all as Nate Oates had in basketball, they wouldn't have fired him, but now they fired. But since he's got a team way down at the bottom, they fired him. So now they won't have to pay him a buyout if they'd have fired him. Yes, sir.
Larry, hang on. Turn down your television, and we'll come back to you. Be right back. All right, we're back. It's Sports Talk, Sports Talk Media Network. Back to your phone calls in just a second. Let me update the score. So Clemson now finishes up the bottom of the seventh. They score three to take a 6-3 lead as they go to the top of the eighth. So the Tigers have put themselves in great shape. Amick, once again, this time a sacrifice fly, gets an RBI. He had a homer earlier for two RBI, so he's having himself a nice day. Clemson is up 6-3 as they play the top of the eighth. South Carolina, Kentucky just getting underway, top of the first. No score there. College of Charleston with a 5-0 lead on North Carolina A&T in the top of the third. The Cougars need to win some games.
Yeah, they do.
And, of course, as we talked about, Coastal Carolina should be trouncing Appalachian State. They are trailing 4-0 in the bottom of the second.
Long way to go, and they are playing at Springsbrook Stadium, so there will be a lot more runs scored before that game is done.
Yeah, no home runs yet. So we'll see. But somebody a little bit shaky on the mound today for Coastal. They started Morrison. He gave up three earned runs, four runs total so far in two innings. Let's go back to the phones. And, all right, Gamecock Larry, I hope you turned the television down. And so he has. Thank you, sir. We'll let you finish up because you were telling us about why Alabama did what it did with its baseball coach.
Yes, sir. And, Phil, I've been sitting here all day. That TV been on, and I didn't even know it was on. And I can't hear a thing. I just watched it. I thought it was on right. But let me tell you, they done this because they didn't want to make Bo Hunter a payout. If he would have had a record like the Alabama basketball had, and had that player like Alabama basketball had, they wouldn't have fired him. They'd have pushed it under the rug and all that.
Well, but Larry, in all seriousness, they're number 22 in the RPI. Let me see where they are now. They beat Vanderbilt last night, which means they probably moved up in the RPI. Let's see. They were 22. They're now 16 in the RPI. So,
Yes, sir. They had the pitching coach. Some pitchers suing him for mail, whatever you call that stuff. And somebody else got in domestic abuse or something. Some with the Alabama baseball. If he'd have had... if he was a good coach, well, I ain't going to say good coach. If he was the coach like Nate Oates, they thought Nate Oates was, they'd have pushed it under the rug, they'd have fired him, and when the season comes at the end, they wouldn't have to pay him a buyout because they said, we fired him with cause. Mm. They was going to fire him at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And the athletic director better look out. They're going to get him after the end of the season. Mark it down. I may not be around, but you can tell them. Gamecock told us that. May the 4th and 5th, Gamecock told us they were going to fire the AD.
Okay.
Mark it down.
All right, Larry.
Mark it down, Phil.
You'll be here at the end of the season to
I still hope. Okay.
You'll be here at the end of the season to comment on what they do. And thank you for the call. I will say these are some troubling times at Alabama for that AD, and because you had the basketball issue and the way that was handled. Now the baseball situation. Of course, that's out of an AD's hands. I don't know how you put that on an AD when a coach goes rogue on you like that, allegedly. Now the basketball situation, that's an internal thing that they have to look at how they handle that. And now they've got this issue with another person inside the athletic department that has an issue. I don't know if he was hired. These people were – the AD at Alabama is relatively new. I don't know how many of these people he hired. Bohannon's been there, so he didn't hire him. And now Oates has only been there a couple of years. I don't know if he hired him or not, but Oates had no – he had no reason to question anything with Oates and how he's handled his business leading into Alabama. I mean, I think he had a pretty good reputation coming from – I think it was Buffalo was where he was before he came to Alabama. He got Buffalo into the tournament, as I recall. The thing that happened with Alabama basketball with the players, you can't blame that on Greg Byrne, the AD, or anybody. They didn't do it, but it's how they handled it afterwards is what you can question. So, anyway, we'll see what happens there. Listen, as long as Saban is there and Saban's happy and they're getting in the college football playoffs at Alabama, everything else is forgotten.
Yeah, I'm not sure baseball at Alabama is way high up on the priority list for Alabama fans.
No,
They just don't want a scandal. They just don't want a scandal between the end of spring practice and the start of football season.
Just
That's all.
Don't do anything to embarrass the football team.
Exactly, you know, exactly.
You can survive. Go ahead, Pat, what you got?
Just a little bit more to add to that. With Alabama, just a rough 2022-23 academic year. You had a football player strike a Tennessee co-ed on the field after that game. You had another football player arrested for gun and weed possession. I'm not saying their names on purpose. You had a basketball player arrested for capital murder. You had a basketball transfer commit arrested for gun and weed possession while on a visit into Alabama, no longer part of that program. You had your baseball coach fired amid a point-shaving investigation, and you had your deputy AD, who was supposed to be the adult in the room, keeping all the quote-unquote kids in check, arrested for domestic violence.
Yeah.
Not a great
time. That's a lot on the table for one AD to
survive. Now, I will step in and defend the football player, because if the Tennessee fan was not on the field, that wouldn't have happened.
True. True that. Mm-hmm.
So
true that.
I've got no sympathy for the Tennessee fans who are on the field. That player may have feared for whatever, just trying to get out of the stadium.
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
let's go back. I don't condone it, but I'm not going to condemn him either.
Back to the phones, 888-898-2525, and it is Hank in Columbia on a busy Friday. Hank, welcome into Sports Talk. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Phil.
It's so good to hear from you. I can tell in your voice you're excited to be with us.
Oh, yeah. And in addition, with that, just to the Alabama thing, not what I call it.
I can just feel the love. I can feel the love coming from you, Hank, tonight. I can
remember the Alabama baseball coach was already being sued by the player. Remember, for the mistreatment, he had an injury, and he was suing the baseball coach, his assistant, and somebody else.
Did not know that.
About,
I hadn't seen that.
That was an ongoing lawsuit from a player who I guess he got injured when he came on campus, and he was they're suing him about the fact that they didn't let him get treatment or didn't take it seriously, and it turned into a worse injury. And that was going on before the gambling thing hit up. So, because a lot of people felt like this became an easy way out once the gambling thing came up to go ahead and get rid of the coach instead of waiting until that lawsuit to end.
Mm-hmm.
But don't cry for us, corn on the basketball thing. One thing I would say for looking at the piece that LSU added for South Carolina now with South Carolina added the National JUCO Player of the Year today, the backup Cardoza, the 6'6" center.
Mm-hmm.
And so with her and the Papal girl that came from Oregon, both of those were McDonald's All-Americans. So South Carolina has 12 players on the team, but I think they may add one more from the portal. But out of the 12 players they have on the team, and this is where it's going to be interesting when they play LSU, it's going to be the same thing that they had kind of this year. Out of the 12 players on South Carolina's team, 11 of them are McDonald's All-Americans. And a number of them were players who are top 10, top 8 players in the country who've just been sitting for 2 years behind Boston and all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, listen, there's no question they are absolutely loaded to the gills, even though they lost great players. Now, I mean, Aaliyah Boston, think about the quality of the players you lost, though. I mean, you lost, what, four?
You lost Boston and
draft picks?
You lost five draft picks.
Five draft picks.
You lost five draft picks. But these girls that were sitting on the bench are girls who were projected to come out of high school to be WNBA players. You know, the Johnson girl, that's the point guard. She was just chosen to compete with 20 other girls for the U.S. America team this summer. Mm-hmm. The kids girl that you named, that's only the reason she's not a McDonald's All-American is because she came early.
Mm-hmm.
She's already got a gold medal. The Fagan girl is going to probably step into Boston's spot from a scoring standpoint in the post. She was the number three player in the country, and she's got two gold medals. So you got about 7 to 8 girls on that team that have played USA basketball. They've just been sitting behind superstars for 2 years, but they've been competing against them for 2 years in practice. So I think a lot of people, LSU's going to be a good team, great team playing in South Carolina, a great team. But I think a lot of people that think this didn't understand what South Carolina had on that bench.
Yeah. Yeah, they're deep. They're talented. They're going to be right in the mix again next season. Hank, thank you very much. They got a great program, and Dawn Staley has got it set
Absolutely.
Up where great players want to come play for her, and great players want to come play for with other great players. And that's not to mention that there aren't other great teams in the country, and I think they found that out. Now, look, they mm-hmm. player for player, they were probably more talented overall than Iowa. But Iowa had a great game plan. They had a superstar having a great night, and then they had an unexpected player have a big night inside, their big girl, who they kept running that pick and roll with, and she was dynamite. And South Carolina never really did a good job of defending that. Mm-hmm. That's why one of the main reasons they went down to Iowa, along with some other things. Even though that was a game they could have won because it was a close ball game into the last couple of possessions. They had a chance there at the very end to win that ball game, but they did not. The point is that as talented as they are, they're going to be running up against teams with equal or just maybe a little less amount of talent. How good is Connecticut going to be when they have their superstar back?
They're going to be great.
Yeah.
When Paige Beckers gets back, that's the missing piece to a team that probably could have been to the Final Four had she been on the right or healthy throughout the season. So they're going to be back, I think. And LSU is really you can't overlook the pieces that LSU has added to its roster as well.
Yeah.
I mean, Kim Mulkey has done a great job, much like Dawn Staley has. Kim Mulkey's done as good a job, I think, in the transfer portal to add to needs that she had on her team. I mean, that roster that Pat ran down a little while ago, that's an impressive starting five and then some off the bench, much like what USC is going to be able to run out starting in November.
Absolutely. We should mention this in baseball. It's unbelievable turn of events in the Conference Carolinas tournament in North Carolina. The defending national champions, North Greenville, go 0-2 in the tournament. In the process of losing today, their standout, John Michael Fail, hit his 75th career home run. That ties the Division II record. He already has the record for career RBIs. He'll probably get a chance to break that when they get to the national tournament. But the surprising thing is they lost to Francis Marion. Francis Marion had to win a play-in game just to get in the tournament. Then they go and beat the number one seed, the defending national champion, the regular season champion, North Greenville. And then North Greenville lost today to Belmont Abbey. So they're out, and Francis Marion is still in, and they're playing this afternoon. So that's they trail. Francis Marion is trailing Mount Olive 13-7 after seven innings. So, but the unbelievable thing is that North Greenville is out after two games.
And I hope, and, D2 is a lot different. We ran into that during the football season when Newberry thought they were in the postseason and didn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that doesn't knock North Greenville out of a chance to defend their title. I mean, this team won 44 games and won the Conference Carolina's regular season by a landslide. I think they've obviously done enough, but D2 is a screwy thing in terms of the postseason. It may not be as easy as, well, we just put them in because of how good they were. They should be in, but...
Yeah, let me give you a final. Francis Marion loses to Mount Olive 14-7. So they are still in the tournament, and they'll play the loser of Barton and UNC Pembroke. They'll play that game tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Okay? All right. We go to the break, and our phone number, 888-898-2525. More calls coming up. Clemson leading Louisville 6-3, bottom of the eighth. USC and Kentucky scoreless, bottom of the first. College of Charleston 5-0 over North Carolina A&T, bottom of the third. And just like we called it, Appalachian State 6-0 over Coastal Carolina. Top of the third. God, did we put the curse on the Chanticleers tonight?
And by the way, just looking at the latest regional rankings, which carry a lot of weight in D2, North Greenville is still the top team in the Southeast region, so it should be okay.
Okay. Wofford 2-1 over Greensboro, top of the fourth. Be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Mike Morgan. I want to tell you about an exciting new product from my friends at Vision Air Solutions. Staying healthy in my line of work is so critical, and probably in yours as well. A large factor in all that is making sure we're breathing in healthy and safe air every day. That's where Vision Air Solutions comes in. They make sure your home has air purification for all the air pollution you can't see. Viruses, mold, bacteria, stale odors, cooking smells, and volatile organic compounds. They make sure your home is full of clean air and also offer HVAC duct cleaning and sanitation as well. Make sure you and your family are breathing clean air today by giving Vision Air Solutions a call today. 803-220-1811. That's 803-220-1811. Tell them Mike sent you.
Have you turned on the fun? Try Cash Pop from the South Carolina Education Lottery. Pick one number from 1 to 15. Win up to $2,500, or play all 15 numbers, and you're guaranteed to win. Play twice a day to double your fun. It really is that easy. Visit sceducationlottery.com to get the details. Cash Pop, it's the light of the party.
Hi, I'm Jim Corbett. I've been an attorney for more than 30 years. There's one thing I've learned about injury cases. It's you need the personal touch. You need the lawyer to get to know you and describe your damages. You don't want a case manager talking to an insurance company and then talking to you and then talking to maybe to a lawyer with limited experience at the last minute to try to settle a case. I talk to you. I find out what your case is about. Jim at JimCorbettAttorney.com. Jim at JimCorbettAttorney.com for your injury cases.
Imagine a scrapbook filled with all your favorite memories of 75 years of NASCAR gone by. Now imagine that scrapbook going 190 miles per hour.
Have you ever? No, I've never!
You don't have to imagine. You need to get to Darlington. Where the drivers of today tackle the track too tough to tame, just like they did your first time. NASCAR Throwback Weekend at Darlington Raceway, May 12th through the 14th. Get your tickets today at darlingtonraceway.com.
All right, 6-3 Clemson over Louisville. Tigers have two on, one out, bottom of the eighth. South Carolina scoreless, bottom of the first against Kentucky. The Gamecocks in their half of the first, they did get a couple of guys on with two out via walks, but then Denny flied out to left to kill that threat. In the bottom of the inning, Sanders gave up a leadoff single. Then he walked a batter, but he got a double play ball, but then he hit a batter, and then there was a steal of second, and then there was a wild pitch and a score. So now Kentucky's taking a 1-0 lead on some sloppy play there by the Gamecocks without really hitting the baseball.
Haven't gotten it out of the infield.
No.
They had the base hit was to,
2 second
base.
Base
hit to second, yeah.
Yeah, so they're down 1-0, but again, they fall behind. They did that all series long against Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
Now they fall behind again. By the way, nobody really haven't had a chance. I guess I should answer my own question. Gary Burnham, you weren't here. Was it Wednesday night? Gary Burnham, I think it was Wednesday night I was talking about the Clemson selections for their Athletic Hall of Fame, and Gary Burnham, former Clemson outfielder, was one of those. And I posed the question, why is Gary Burnham, I won't say universally famous, but nationally famous? Do you have any idea?
Wow. No, you've stumped me there.
I'm not going to waste any more time with it. I'll just go ahead and tell you. He was the player. I'd have to look up the year. Clemson was in the College World Series. He was the Tigers' left fielder. They were playing at Friendly Rosenblatt Stadium. And there was, well, one out or zero outs, less than two outs. And there were runners on the bases. I can't remember how many. There were runners on the bases. Fly ball to Burnham. He makes a nice catch, kind of near the stands, left field line, kind of near the stands, running that way. Two outs. Unfortunately, he thought it was three outs.
Three. Oh, no.
And he threw the baseball into the stands.
No.
And everybody tagged and came in.
Oh, no.
However many were on base.
I actually pulled up his name in case you were going to ask the answer, and I could type real fast and think I was smart. 1995.
Is that when that was?
That was the team that was in the World Series, but my gracious.
Yeah.
That's tough.
That moment has lived in College World Series infamy.
Didn't the Miami coach after the game have some pretty funny quotes about it, too? Like, he thought it was a joke, didn't even think it was real?
I don't know. We'd have to go back and look. Was it against Miami?
I think that's right. Yeah. I believe it was in the College World Series against Miami.
Yeah, yes. I mean, he was a really good player at Clemson. A really good player. Unfortunately, that play kind of stands out because of what it meant at that time. All right.
Well, remember when Jackie Bradley caught the fly ball to end the World Series and claim another title for South Carolina, and he tosses it into the stands?
Yeah.
Didn't he say afterwards, "Why did I do that? That was a souvenir ball.
Absolutely.
I just threw it to the stands."
And he nonchalanted that play, too.
Yeah.
You go back and look at the video, it was so nonchalant that, I mean, of course, that was Jackie Bradley. He played with a flair.
Oh, yeah.
But he could very easily, well, most people would have probably dropped that ball, but he wasn't most people. He knew what he was doing out there. But that was, from a standpoint of an observer watching it, thinking to myself, that's awful casual to be going after the baseball like that for such an important final out to win the championship.
Here's the quote. Quote, "It was fair by 2 feet. I saw him throw it into the stands, and I guess every time you go out to the ballpark, you see something new."
This was the Miami coach?
So this was I misspoke. I thought it was the coach was Jim Morris from Miami, but he waived the player, and it's the player, quote, his last name is Gomez.
Yeah. How many runs scored on that play, does it say?
Let's see here.
I don't remember how many they had on base, but they could all advance and come home. All they had to do was tag.
The way this is reading, it's not a very well-written article, and it's mostly behind a paywall. It appears just one, if I'm correct, but I may be wrong with that.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Phil, because if you throw the ball, let's say you're at short, and you airmail your toss to first, and it ends up in the dugout, which would be the equivalent of going in the stands.
Well, that's a good
point.
The
runners can only advance one base.
Yeah.
So my guess is probably maybe at the most two runs could come in.
That's a good point. Give them two bases. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, back to the phones. 888-898-2525 is our number here on Sports Talk. It's Bruce in Missouri with us next. Good evening, Bruce. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Phil. How you doing?
Good.
Have a good weekend this
weekend.
Yeah,
thank you. Sure, you too.
Mm-hmm. I went to school with Kel Mulkey at Louisiana Tech my junior and senior year, and she was a freshman, I think, and a sophomore. And Barrymore was the guy that was the head coach, and he's the one that stuck with her all the way through coaching when she went to Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they had already been to several national championships and lost or something like that. I can't remember the rhythm of what went on, but they won national championships while she was there. And
yeah, I think Pat mentioned earlier they won a couple national champs. She won a couple as a player, didn't she? She won a couple natties as a player.
That's right, too.
Right, yeah. And this is before, you know, women's basketball got popular and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, anyway, so I'd leave Louisiana and come back home to Carolina and working at Clemson. And I'll never forget turning the TV on a Saturday afternoon, and Louisiana Tech was playing North Carolina for the women's championship. And I got part of the second half, and they were back and forth, taking the lead on the shots they were taking. And it ended up at 0.6 seconds. Ball went out, and it was North Carolina's ball to throw it in. And I'll never forget this as long as I live. The lady that it was a shot right at the end line in the corner, a three-point shot, and North Carolina won the national championship from Louisiana Tech.
Mm.
I mean, it was just one of those things, you know, a thriller,
mm-hmm.
like you see now and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But
Louisiana Tech
really
was the standard right? And yeah. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Pam Parsons came from Old Dominion, but there was another, before Barrymore, there was another coach, another woman who led Louisiana Tech, wasn't there? We'll be back.
Welcome back to Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. You can reach the guys with the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number, 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now back to Phil, Chris, and Pat with the second hour of Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network.
Okay, back with you, Friday night edition, Sports Talk Media Network. Coming up about 15 minutes, Jeff Owens in the fast lane. Following that, birdies, bogeys, biceps around South Carolina. By the way, as I look up at our stream tonight and I see myself, guys, I think I look particularly handsome tonight. Maybe more so than most nights. I don't know. Maybe it's the Friday vibes I'm getting. Wonder what the people think. Wonder what the people really think.
I don't know. Why don't you post a... That could be the Twitter poll for next week. What do you really think of Phil's looks on video?
Yeah, I'm afraid to put that out there.
Perfect 10.
There's a lot of trolls out there would like nothing more than to have some fun with that, huh? Don't you think?
Coyote ugly. I mean, somewhere in between. Where are we with Phil?
Dog ugly. Really? Well, let's pass on that. We'll come up with something a little more juicy. As a matter of fact, speaking of the poll question of the week, it's about to close out for this week. So if you haven't had a chance to vote, I'd get over there to do it. And the question is, who do you think will be the first player from South Carolina taken in the 2024 draft? Good reaction of voters, 582 to this point. Question had 13,000 views, it says. That's too much apathy. If we have 13,000 views, we should have more than 582 votes, right? That's apathy.
It's like the normal voting public in the United States, Phil. You know, if we get 35% show up and vote for an election, we feel like that's a good turnout.
But how can you have 13? I'm just going by what the Twitter analytics says here. It says 13,000 views. That's just odd to me. But anyway, Spencer Rattler, 52.6% believe he'll be the first. Doesn't mean a first-round pick.
Right.
First player taken out of the state. Then you got Jeremiah Trotter at 21.6, Barrett Carter at 17.4, and Will Shipley at 8.4. I mean, it could be somebody else that emerges to be the first player in the state. It could be Makumba, could be Juice Wells, could be somebody else who just has a fantastic year and then tests well, does well on the written test, and that becomes the person. But anyway, coming off the draft, I thought that was kind of a decent question to throw out there. Update baseball, then we're going to get to recruiting. It's a final. Clemson wins again. The Tigers beat Louisville 6-3, 6-15-1 for Clemson, 3-4-2 for LaVille. Louisville. Louisville.
Louisville.
Reed Garris gets the win. He goes to 4-0. Ryan Ammons picks up his third save. The Tigers have got some magic there at the back end of their bullpen now with the way Garris has been pitching. Ammons coming in as your closer. And just taking a look at some of the numbers, Cannarella had four hits. He's now batting .399. I'd say he's got to be leading candidate for Rookie of the Year.
If he's not, I'd like to see who steals that award away from him.
How about Will Taylor? 3-for-4. He's batting .331. Cooper Engel, 2-for-4. He's batting .330. And Amick had that two-run homer, three RBIs on the day. He's batting .404. And Grice went 1-for-3. He's batting .312. They have gotten the bats red hot up and down their lineup. Darden went 6 innings, did not figure in the win or loss. There was no loss, didn't figure in the win. Garris got the win. He went 1 2/3 innings, did not give up a hit or a run. He did walk two. He struck out one. He goes a 4-0. And Ammons pitched a 1 1/3 innings, allowed a hit, and that was it for him. And he picked up the save. That's save number 3. So the Tigers, they get the win, And with that victory, they continue to kind of inch their way up in the ACC, or, you know, trying to move up and keep up with those ahead. But this certainly helps. That makes the Tigers overall now. Let's see here. I got to pull up the ACC standings real quick just to be accurate about this. So that makes the Tigers, with that win now, that should make them 30-17 and 13-10 in the ACC, and moving up on Boston College, which is going into 10-11 in the ACC and 29-14. Let me see if this is including today's win or not. I'm not sure. Give me just a second.
Yeah, I think Clemson actually is probably 29-17 and 12-10, I believe, but nonetheless.
Yeah, you're right, because this does, that does, I'm looking at the Warren Nolan. That does include today's wins. That does make them 29-17. Yeah.
But nonetheless, Clemson is rapidly becoming a team that no one is going to win. If they don't play their way into hosting a regional, and they've still got a lot of work to do, but if they end up as a two seed somewhere, there's not going to be a team anywhere that's going to want them in their regional. Well, that's a dangerous baseball team right now.
You look at what they've done since being swept by Wake Forest. Let's see. Well, that was back. Let's move forward a little bit. Since losing to Georgia, that midweek game, they swept NC State, beat Kennesaw State, took two out of three from Boston College, and now they have beaten Louisville. So they got a good little stretch going. That's three, that's four in a row, that's five in a row, that's five out of six, that is seven out of eight. They've won seven of eight.
Orange jerseys. I'm telling you guys, they wore the orange jerseys again today.
They might never take them off. You pointed that out when we had Coach on.
No, about and he kind of chuckled. He didn't want to admit to that, but yeah. I'm wondering if they even wash these things now.
Yeah, really,
they
wouldn't.
They leave, hang them up in the locker room, and let's go to work tomorrow.
Kentucky's taking a 2-0 lead on the Gamecocks now in the top of the third. They scored a run in the bottom of the first on a wild pitch, and now they've gotten a home run by McCoy inside the Parker.
How about that?
Did you see what happened?
I did not. I just saw that it was an inside-the-park home run, and I've seen some people on social media, Gamecock fans obviously, pointing out that it's darn AstroTurf again. So I don't know if it just scooted past the outfielders and rolled all the way. I would imagine it got into the gaps in left center or right center, but yeah, it must have scooted along the turf and rolled for a while.
Gamecocks have had their base runners. They've left three on base in the first two innings in the top of the second. With two outs again, they got a single, but that was it. A ground out, the strand of that runner. They had a chance in the first and could not get anything in. So they are down 2-0 as they bat in the top of the third. Charleston with an 8-0 lead on North Carolina A&T. By the way, have you checked out the stats on Will Prevett from the College of Charleston? About those stats, let me tell you what he is doing, because, I mean, quietly, at least maybe outside of the city of Charleston, he is having another phenomenal season. Last time I looked at his numbers, let's see here. He is on the season going into this weekend. He was up their pitchers here. He was 2-2 with a 2.12 ERA. So his ERA has risen just a little bit. He's got six saves, 34 innings pitched, 54 strikeouts.
Wow.
He's not allowed a home run. Teams are batting 168 against him. He has walked 20. Maybe that's been a little bit of a downfall for him this season. He has walked 20, but he hasn't given up a home run. Teams are batting 158, and he's got a 2.12 and a 2-2 record with six saves. He'll be a first-round pick, right?
Oh,
he's
going to
be a first-round pick.
Yeah, there's no question. He's got the stuff. And remember, months ago when the college had a chance to beat Clemson, they brought him in, and the Tigers actually got to him. Clemson's one of the few people, a few teams, that have been able to have any success against him when they were trying. Chad Holbrook thought, hey, got a great opportunity here to steal one against Clemson. And unfortunately, his ace, who hasn't failed him much, didn't come through that night. And by the way, I've just seen the replay on the home run ball for Kentucky. It had nothing to do with the AstroTurf. And Will Sanders has got to be wondering, what can I do? He gets a fly ball to right field, and Carolina misplays it. They can't find the ball. And it actually bounces over the center field. It bounces towards the wall in center field. Mm. And by the time they get it back to the infield, the runner from Kentucky's around third.
Mm.
Just lost
our buddy,
in the sun, it appeared.
Our buddy in Sumter, Tommy, tells us Tyler Davis will be drafted before anyone. That's a good point. It could be Tyler Davis being the first pick out of the state. All right, let me update a few other things. We told you about Charleston, Appalachian with a 6-0 lead on Coastal. Coastal's only got one hit. They're down 6-0, bottom of the fourth. Give you some more baseball. NC State leading Notre Dame, top of the ninth, 4-1. Wofford and Greensboro, 2-2 after 5. Florida State, 3-2 over Mercer after 4. Tennessee, 2-1 over Georgia, top of the fifth. Charleston Southern and High Point, scoreless, top of the fourth. Upstate, 2-1 over Gardner-Webb, bottom of the fourth. LSU, 2-0 over Auburn, bottom of the first. Georgia Tech, 4-1 over Pitt, bottom of the fourth. Winthrop, Radford, bottom of the fourth, they are 1-1. Miami and Presbyterian, scoreless, bottom of the first. Arkansas, 2-0 over Mississippi State after the first. Ole Miss, Missouri, scoreless, bottom of the first. Florida, Texas A&M, scoreless, bottom of the first. With that, let's jump to recruiting. Before we get to Jeff Owens in the Fast Lane, our recruiting report brought to you by, you got it, it's Seawell's time. Hey, it's springtime. It'll be summertime. You're getting married. You're getting hitched up. Or you just want to have a big old summertime party. Maybe it's an anniversary party. Maybe it's a divorce party. Whatever it is you're celebrating. Well, I imagine the divorcees celebrate when they finally finish it up. Give Seawells a call, and whatever you're planning, they will take it over and they'll make it happen for you because they've been doing it for about 8 decades now, okay? So let them handle all the work. They'll come to your location or they'll host it at their location on Rosewood Drive in Columbia. Just make one phone call and talk to the guys at Seawells at 803-771-7385, online at SeawellsCateringSC.com. And don't forget the daily lunch and buffet again next week, every day, Monday through Friday, from 11 till 2. Recruiting-wise, had a conversation with Cam Scott of Lexington last night, one of the top players in the country in the 24 class, 6'4 standout. Had a bunch of offers, as you might recall. Narrowed his list some, USC, Tennessee, Kansas, Florida State, Auburn, and Texas. Made officials to USC, Auburn, and Texas, and unofficials to Duke and Tennessee last year. He told us last night after Nate Oates was in the home from Alabama, he and the family, they've decided to kind of slow things down and reopen things. He did say that Texas, South Carolina, Auburn, at one point earlier this year, he was close to committing to one of those, and he actually said South Carolina and Texas were kind of tied. But then they had to change in the coaching staff at Texas. And that was one thing the family saw, plus things happening in the transfer portal, John. Want to let those things kind of play out. Coaching moves, portal John moves, and kind of let things settle down. That's why they're not going to rush this thing right now. So they've kind of backed off of a decision. He said now he looks like he'll do something at the end of Peach Jam, which will be July 3 through 9. He averaged at an AAU event last weekend 14 points and 6 rebounds per game. He's got an event in Dallas next weekend, then one in Memphis 2 weeks after that. He's going to try and work in some official visits. He said he's looking to see if he can get to Alabama for one, possibly Florida State. May go back to South Carolina for a second visit. Of course, Lamont Paris is working him very hard. He's been impressed with what Paris has done at South Carolina. They're in touch with him a lot. The assistant coaches check in with him all the time. And he does not yet have an in-home date with Paris, but he said one will be coming up pretty soon, he believes. So right now, he said South Carolina is up there for sure. Then Florida State, Alabama. He's got Texas and still Auburn. Also Ole Miss, because Chris Beard is now the coach at Ole Miss, and he was the coach at Texas who was making inroads with him. So you got to look at Ole Miss. Plus Oregon and Georgetown have now jumped in the mix. Last night, Oates was in for a visit. Earlier, Chuck Martin, the former Gamecock assistant who's now at Oregon, was in for a visit. Of course, he was the Gatorade Player of the Year in South Carolina last season. 6'5", Sakima Walker of Northwest Florida State Junior College committed to USC today. She made an official visit in April. She also visited Ole Miss, National Junior College Player of the Year. She averaged 17-8, 60% from the floor, 75% from the line. She began her career at Rutgers By my count, she should have at least two seasons of eligibility, counting the free season for COVID. That gives Dawn Staley five newcomers in the class. 6-1 DePaul transfer Anisha Morrow committed to LSU over USC and others. Clemson offered 2025 6'9 Trent Steinauer of Hendersonville, North Carolina. He also has offers from Wake Forest, Charlotte, and Radford. 6'11 Cooper Bowser out of Wichita, Kansas, has signed with Furman. He averaged about 9 points, 4.5 rebounds per game last season. He's a native of Woodbridge, Virginia. Former USC forward Daniel Hankins Sanford transferring to UMass to reunite with Frank Martin. 6'11 Michael Marsh, who prepped at Gray Collegiate, transferring to Oklahoma State from Jacksonville University. Football safety Kaj Sanders, Oradell, New Jersey, set an official with USC for June 2nd. He's also got Wisconsin May 30th, North Carolina June 9th, Miami June 18th, and Penn State June 23rd. He will announce on July 30th. Offensive lineman Nye Mansell, the transfer from Mercer, who visited USC on Monday and has a PWO offer, said he is planning to accept that offer from the Gamecocks over some FCS offers that has come his way since entering the portal, John. He said he has to wait until being admitted to the university before announcing his final plans. Defensive end Quintavious Johnson, 6'5", 244 of Atlanta. USC has also offered 2025 receiver Quincy Porter of Oradell, New Jersey, 25 defensive end London Merritt of Atlanta, 25 receiver Daylon Singleton, DeSoto, Texas, 26 defensive tackle DeVaron Geralds of Sewanee, Georgia, 26 receiver Dijer Carter, Mineral, Virginia, and 26 running back Savion Hyder of Mineral, Virginia. Clemson set for an official from wide receiver Cam Coleman, Phenix City, Alabama, on June 2nd. He'll go to LSU June 23rd, Auburn, Kentucky, Florida State, and Georgia also up there with him. And 2025, Belton Honey of Path running back Marquise Henderson was offered by East Carolina. He also has Coastal Carolina, Georgia Tech, Charlotte, Liberty, and Virginia Tech on his offer lists. Keep in touch with our recruiting every day on our website, sportstalksc.com. On Twitter, use the hashtag STRecruiting. We're going to go racing after the break in Kansas, of all places. We'll be back in a moment.
Life, it has its ups and downs. Sometimes it's little things like hitting every red light or dropping your cell phone. Maybe it's the bills, rent, or pressure at work. But when it comes to the South Carolina Education Lottery, you should never feel like playing will solve everything. The lottery is a game. It's played for fun. So set a dollar amount. Expect not to win and make sure responsibilities, family, friends, and work come first. Visit PlayResponsiblySC.com.
George Bryant for Tsunami Bar Sports. Our inventor, David Abernathy, has Tsunami Bar technology allows us to take the training to the grass. Now I know through my sport of golf that natural agility can be converted to athletic ability. And why is this, Tsunami Robbie?
Transferring the training to the grass. This may be the most undervalued characteristic of the Tsunami flexible bar technology. The Tsunami bar action loads and unloads at the concentric and eccentric transition points. This is what we call reversal forces. And the Tsunami bar is the only bar and training device that I know of that can train these reversal forces adequately at speed.
Hey, this is Phil Kornblut. The Tsunami bar is a terrific training device whether you're working on your fitness or your golf game. It's convenient, it's easy to use, and you won't feel beat up afterwards. Be sure to click on the digital ad on sportstalksc.com and get 5% off any order using promo code BBB5. Don't wait. Order today.
Score a touchdown with Founders Federal Credit Union. With services like Founders Online and the Founders app, you'll enjoy all the perks of a big bank with local personalized service. Not a member? Joining Founders Federal Credit Union is easy. Visit relaxjoinfounders.com or one of our 37 convenient locations to see if you qualify for membership. Relax with Founders. Terms and conditions apply. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Parents ask, what's the best way to save for college? I'm State Treasurer Curtis Loftus, and my answer is always open a Future Scholar 529 College Savings Account. It's easy. You can get started online with any amount. It's flexible to adapt your child's college dreams. And you can deduct 100% of your contributions from the South Carolina state tax return. So what are you waiting for? Go to FutureScholar.com and see why it's the smart, easy way to save for college. FutureScholar.com.
Look at him. Let's go racing, boys, with Toto in Kansas. All right, let's welcome in Jeff Owens in the fast lane. We have to go fast tonight. Jeff, welcome in. How are you, sir?
Doing well, Phil. How are you?
We're doing fine. Sorry we have to squeeze you into the pit box here. You got one of these Darlington pit boxes we're dealing with, so we're squeezing you in tight. But we were talking earlier about Kansas, and, I mean, is there anything about the Kansas track that stands out in your mind that makes it unique?
Not really. No, it's a good venue. It's good to be in the Midwest like that and a good market for them. But the track is kind of a typical mile-and-a-half oval, kind of like, you know, Charlotte, Vegas, Homestead, those tracks. So it's not really unique. But, you know, it's the drivers love it. I've never quite understood that. And the races have been okay. You know, unlike some of the other mile-and-a-half tracks, they seem to produce good racing. So far, it's been a success for them, I think.
So Kyle Busch now is your leader and is having an excellent year to date. Now, it's still kind of early, but is he a good front runner as a points leader?
Well, I think so. You know, we'll see. I think the question is, can Richard Childress Racing keep giving him good cars every week? Because, you know, they're a team that was down for several years there, and now they've sort of clawed their way back, improved a little bit. Now they put a great driver like Kyle Busch in there, but they got to be consistent, give him the car. You give him a fast car every week, he's absolutely the guy to beat. I think that's the only question is, can Childress keep giving him a good car? But, you know, he's won a couple of races now, and both of them, you know, they want them kind of on strategy with a late race move. And we go to a track this weekend where Kyle's won several times. And, you know, this might be a weekend where he could get out front and lead a lot of laps and sort of run away with the thing. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
What are you seeing from Chase Elliott coming off the injury? This is a track where he's had a little bit of success as well. Is he showing the progress coming off that injury and running is where you expect him to run at this point?
Yeah, I think he's fine physically, and as a driver, he looks just fine. I think where they're off a little bit is, you know, that driver crew chief thing is important, and getting rhythm and repetition and getting your communication down and them getting the car adjusted to his liking, you know, that's a process, and that's something that you build on and make progress and momentum on every single week. So being out 6 weeks, I think, set them back in that area. So I think that's where I see them struggling a little bit. He's driving the car just fine, but the car doesn't appear to be as fast as you would normally expect from him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because, you know, the chemistry with the crew is maybe a little off because these cars change and the setups under them change every week. And if you're missing a bunch of races, you're falling behind. So that's what I see with him right now. I don't think it's going to be very long at all before he's up there leading laps and winning a race and getting himself back into the playoffs.
All right, 30 seconds. You think Ross Chastain gets a little payback, or they're going to wait?
He's going to get it at some point. There's no question. Might not come this weekend. That'd be a little too obvious. It's a fast track. You don't want to take a chance. He's got it coming from several guys, and he'll get it. No question about that. But I'll tell you what. If you're a team owner in this sport, you know, you want that guy in your car because he's not afraid to push the button and go. And he's going to win some races. And right now, he's the guy that really looks like the front runner, if you ask me.
And, you know, he's got people talking about him and his team. So, hey,
Absolutely.
Any publicity is good publicity.
Until his owner and sponsor say quit doing this, he's going to keep going pedal to metal.
Well, listen, we'll let you run next Friday, get you on earlier to spend more time on the big weekend at Darlington. You have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, you too, Phil. See you guys.
Thank you, Jeff. Be right back.
Four! Straight down the middle. It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook just a wee bit. And that's when my caddy lost sight of it. That little white pellet has never been found to this day.
Man, I tell you what, it's a great time in the Carolinas to pull out the sticks and get out on the links. The weather has just been gorgeous. I love the 25 to 30 mile an hour gusts that help take my little shot and push it forward when I get it up into the elevation, and it catches that jet stream and it drives that ball deeper down the fairway. Yeah, I mean, I wish I could. If I could do that, I really would take advantage of the jet stream. But people like George Bryan and others, they can, and they'll be joining us here in just a moment as we go to George and our guests. Let me tell you what's happening in round two, Wells Fargo in Charlotte, North Carolina. Tyrrell Hatton and Nate Lashley and Wyndham Clark, they are your leaders. They are tied at 8-under par. Xander Schauffele's at 7-under with J.J. Spahn. And also at 7-under, several others, Justin Thomas, Adam Scott, Sung J.M., Adam Svensson, all at 7-under par. Now some others that we keep an eye on. We've got Matthew Neesmith, a 71 today, the former Gamecock, is 4-under. And we've got Roy McIlroy, a 73 at minus 1. Lucas Glover, 73, is even. Carson Young, a 69, even. And Colin Morikawa, plus 4 for the tournament. Doc Redman, 71, plus 4. Ben Martin came back with a 68 after a 79, plus 5. And Jordan Spieth, 72, 77, plus 7. Projected cut is going to be at minus 1 as we welcome George Bryan the third into birdies, bogeys, and biceps. George, great to have you with us. Wells Fargo, beautiful track. Seeing some great players have some issues out there the last couple of days.
All right. So, well, that golf course is extremely difficult, and no surprise, but while a few of them do have issues, there's some awfully good scores on the board too. I'm kind of surprised at how bunched up this year, and I hadn't been out there since. Well, it's been a couple of years, but there's something different that they're doing, and I wish I was there to attest what it was. But the scores, especially at the top, it's crowded, really crowded. It's kind of fun to see. I like how the par fives and the scoreables. I like the score holes too, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
My plans were thwarted a little bit. I was heading up, but guess what? My grand youngins, who live within a couple of blocks of the golf course, they decided to come here. So we've been all afternoon hanging around golf and just having a blast.
Well, that sounds like fun, but I call that poor planning, if you ask me, George. I mean, you could have said, "Yeah, y'all just stay home, and we'll come over there, and then we'll prance over the golf course for a little while, and then we'll come back over to your place."
Well, I appreciate that. Phil, that was not my call. Believe it or not, that was not my call.
All right, well, listen, we got Robbie on the line, Robbie Thames. Of course, we're brought to you by the Tsunami Bar and Tsunami Bar Sports and Golf Center over in Columbia. And Robbie's with us. We've got Matt Davidson, the head golf coach of the Furman men's team, headed to the NCAA tournament next week. I had communicated with Jordan Bird from Clemson, because they're hosting the regional, and he confirmed earlier that he'd be with us, but we've not connected. I don't know if he might have gone up into the mountains to check out the golf course or something and doesn't have a signal. So we were going to have stepping to the side, we were going to have a foursome. So now we're down to a threesome, but that's okay. George, take it away.
Oh, I can't. We can play in Wolf. We can go up to 6 or 7. It's really neat to have Matt Davidson on. But let's bring them all up together. We can bounce that ball around a little bit. Welcome, Tsunami Robbie. Good evening.
Good evening, George. Good evening, Phil. Good to be with you guys this week.
And I want to go ahead and bring Matt Davidson on, former PGA Tour player, Korn Ferry Tour player. He's got his Paladins in great shape. Hadn't talked to him in years, but did watch him quite a bit in college golf and is early in his pro career. And welcome, Matt Davidson. Welcome, Coach. How you doing?
Hey, George. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I know it's been a while, George, and obviously you're doing well, and it's it's good to be here.
And so it's Robbie Thames is a strength and conditioning coach with Tsunami Bar Sports, Matt. And just a little background. I watched you play. The last time I watched you, it could have been in Charlotte. Did I get that wrong? Did you play in the Wells Fargo, which would have been Wachovia at the time?
I didn't. So I had my year on tour was 2005, and then when I kind of crossed paths with you and your bro, was mostly on the Nationwide Tour and the Web.com. So about 9 years out there after the PGA Tour. So I think that year I was on tour, I don't think I was lucky enough to sneak into the field at the Waco. I think it was just starting there, the Wells Fargo at Quail Hollow. It was immediately a pretty big time in demand event that the pecking order out there. I don't think I snuck in there as a rookie, but I know it's a great event.
And it's really neat to have so many great. We got great golf here in South Carolina, and now the Paladins are heading to the regional hosted there, right up the road at the Cliffs. I would guess you have. First of all, congratulations, and talk to us a little bit about what's getting ready to happen, how your season went, and what your expectations are.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, George. Yeah, it was a special season. So 2010 is the last time we've made the NCAA regionals, but we've been knocking on the door probably for about the last 2 years. So it was nice to finally kick the door down. We have a really strong conference, the Southern Conference. So we actually had four teams make NCAA regionals. So we weren't able to win our conference, but we got an at-large bid, and usually goes to about the top 65 teams in the nation. We came in at 58th, which, I feel like we spent the whole year on the bubble, and the guys handled that scenario pretty well with the expectations and the pressure that's involved in that, because they wanted as bad as anyone. So they, with about two tournaments left, we were 60 seconds. So we knew we needed a strong finish, and we played solid at Vanderbilt's event, came in sixth there, beat a couple highly ranked teams, and then went to our conference tournament, the Southern Conference Championship, and came in third, and right behind East Tennessee State and Chattanooga, who are two top 40 teams in the nation. So it was a two good events to finish, and I think the guys felt good, like they went out there and kind of earned it, and went out and got it those last couple of weeks. So we've got a good opportunity ahead of us. I'm glad we're going up there to the Cliffs. We play out there probably once a semester. They're nice enough to have us out there, so it's close, it's familiar. I think the guys maybe wouldn't have minded going to like Las Vegas or out to California or something like that, rather than going right up the road. But I think it's the best spot for us to have an opportunity to advance. So we'll have to play really well. It's a pretty stout field, but they're all pretty strong when you get this far. So we'll have to. I think we play our best. We'll have a chance.
Well, I'll tell you what. Just to get the invite to such a prestigious event is pretty special. Talk a little bit about your team and your guys, please.
Yeah. So we have right now. We've got a pretty veteran team, which is nice. We have three seniors who have been really playing since they were freshmen in the lineup. So a lot of experience. And then a sophomore and a freshman. Sophomore Will Moreland is he's kind of been right at the top of the lineup leading us all year long. Three wins. I think it's 69.7 scoring average. I know these scoring averages have kind of gotten pretty crazy since you and I were playing college golf, George. These guys take it pretty deep now. So he had a great year, sort of the most consistent. Then we had different guys stepping up at different times. So It's nice to have those three seniors, and then Will, the sophomore, and then a freshman named Harris Barth, also playing in the lineup all spring. And both the younger guys have kind of, you know, big time junior golf resumes and a lot of success at every level. And then the three seniors have been in the lineup since they were freshmen. So I feel like it's kind of the most experienced team I've ever thrown out there, which is nice for a coach. You know, I feel comfortable that they'll handle any situation that gets thrown at them, and you don't have to, you know, you can be a little more hands off and trust them to kind of make the right decisions and prepare the best they can. So it's been fun to coach a group with that much experience, for sure.
And speaking of coaching, is this your fifth season?
My fifth year.
You know, because you've been there and talked from a player's perspective, do you have one of those players that when they get the adrenaline, when they get on that special stage with the bright lights, you got anybody, or maybe it's the whole team, talk about who, if you are comfortable talking about those you expect to maybe play up, get outside anything they've ever done?
Yeah, for sure. So we've got a couple guys who have contended in events to win events. Will Moreland, the sophomore that won three times, who's our best player this year. He's the only one that's kind of gotten a win. But we've got a senior, Walker Crosby, who had a runner up in a big event, and another senior, Sam Lape, who's contended a few times this year, and then another senior, Ross Funderburk, who actually made regionals last year as an individual, so had a great year last year and has contended a lot throughout his career too. So I feel like I'm you know, it's nice you got, you know, when you have five guys and you don't know exactly who's going to play well each day, which is kind of a nice thing. Cause, you know, some guys can, you know, you never know from where in the lineup a good round might come. So it's, you know, I'm pretty proud of them, obviously, for the season they put together, and, you know, they put in a lot of hard work, but I feel pretty comfortable that they all could step up next week and play great. But you know, you never know. It's golf, and they're also 19 to 22 years old. So you never really know. But I'm, you know, any one of the five of them could really could have a big week. But I think Will Moreland's probably the one that most are expecting to kind of rise to the bright lights, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's it's a extremely good test of golf. And
yep.
How does your team on this kind of golf course? How does your team fare versus a lot of different styles of championship golf? I actually kind of like. It's fun to watch. Give me your opinion on how you would expect your team to perform.
Yeah, so Kiwi Falls is a fantastic course. It's beautiful, you know, up in the mountains. You got the lake there. Always in great shape. It's the fairways are pretty wide. I mean, you can't spray it. You're going to get in some trouble. So you still have to drive it well, but it's wide enough, and there's five par fives. So I think it might be advantageous to have kind of a team that can bomb it. I feel like we've got a few guys that hit it pretty long, but the greens, you know, you've probably been out there, George, the greens have tons of slope, and I'm sure they'll have them pretty fast and some good hole locations. So it'll be about just keeping in play off the tee. And then, you know, I think there will be some spots around the greens where if you miss it in the wrong spot and short side yourself, and there's going to be some slopes where it's going to make it really tough on and around the greens. So I think we'll have to, you'll have to think your way around a little bit, but it might favor kind of some longer teams off the tee as well.
And you, would you categorize your team as finesse, speed and power, strategical based?
I wish even more strategical based. We're working on that, but we usually have a pretty good game plan, and I help them as much as I can. But definitely a power speed team. We've got some guys that hit it a long way, and we do tend to do better on some courses that we have some room to drive it. We've tried to play the best tournaments we can, so sometimes the courses are short and tight, and some are long and open, and we do probably play a little bit better on the longer open ones because we've got some guys that hit it pretty far off the tee for sure.
Hey, George,
a lot of birdies and try to limit the bogeys for these guys for sure.
George, if I may jump in real quick while we're talking to Matt Davidson, Furman men's golf coach. Two things. How much do you guys interact, hear from your former star?
Faxon.
Yeah. Faxon. Brad Faxon. Yep. How much do you guys hear from him? Number one. Number two, I played years ago with Clay Hendricks when he was an assistant there. I wonder how often he wanders over to the course to take out that long bomb that he hits. And then what kind of golfer is Bob Ritchie? I'll throw three at you there. What kind of golfer is Bob Ritchie?
I love it. So Bob, I don't think even plays golf.
Yeah.
So he's a heck of a basketball coach, and he's a great guy. And I know Bob, but he hasn't ventured up to our facility to hit any balls, and I don't think he plays. Clay plays a lot of golf, so he was my partner one year in the BMW Pro-Am Nationwide Tour event, and he's a very good player, and he probably, I'd say, the day after the football season ends, I usually see him up at our range trying to knock the rust off a little bit. He doesn't play much in season, but he likes to hit some balls and come out and hang out a little bit in his off season, and then And then Brad Faxon's been fantastic for us. He's in contact a lot. He's kind of one of the first ones. So he texts me when we have a good event and tell the guys to congrats from him. And he's helped us out a lot financially as well. We've got an indoor facility that we finished about 18 months ago. That's the Davis and Faxon indoor facility. Cindy Davis and Brad were the principal donors for that. So he helps us out a lot in a lot of ways and supports us. So we're lucky to have guys like that for sure.
Hmm. Well, Tsunami Robbie and I were fortunate enough. This is a few years just before you got there. I think it was 2015 or 16. We watched the basketball team train in your strength and conditioning, your weight room. Give us an update. Are you one of the golf coaches that believes in strength and conditioning?
I am. Yeah, I am. I'm probably a little less like the DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka, and a little more like, TPI and especially in season, trying to make sure your body feels good every day when you tee it up. So I think, with the way the game's going, you need to build speed and strength and do things like that with the way the game's becoming a bit of a power game. But I think it's important, obviously, to stay flexible and injury prevention and make sure you feel good when you tee up too. So I'd say I'm probably like in between, George. I guess about it.
No, I tell you, there. I love it.
Yeah.
The lot of drastic measures that some of the players have taken off, and I don't think they've fared well with it because their injuries followed a pretty good little stretch for a short period of time, but most of the ones who get aggressive and out there on the real heavyweight max reps, low reps but high weight, I think they spent enough time on the injured reserve to know that that's not necessarily the way. And the TPI, they got a lot of research behind them. Tsunami Robbie, you got a question for Coach Matt, Coach Davidson, in that category? Welcome, Tsunami Robbie.
Hey, thank you, George. Coach, good to talk to you.
Hey, Robbie.
Strength and conditioning is, on the golf side, I'm kind of with you. I grew up in the bodybuilding and hypertrophy, powerlifting, football type of atmosphere, and then I transitioned a little bit into the golf. And when I first started training them, and I've said this before, I trained the golfers all wrong. I did them an injustice. I really didn't understand the biomechanics of golf enough to know how to train them properly. And over the years, I've done my due diligence, and I'm much better at it now. And I agree. I think going at, just like George said, you get out after it and go at it a little too aggressively, and the injuries are going to follow. That's been proven out, as we've seen with the professional players, guys at the highest level. And so there are ways to do it. I think, really in golf, you're not carrying your bag, but you're walking a great distance, and you, and you still have to be able to be pliable and mobile. And the most important thing, in my opinion, is to be able to get the most efficient movement out of your body as you possibly can, because everything happens at impact, that one split second. So to be able to be strong and fast at a particular moment, that's what we need to do to get the golfers to perform like we want them to.
Absolutely.
David Abernathy, who's a co-inventor of the Tsunami Bar, spent quite a bit of time at Furman as a strength and conditioning coach after leaving Clemson. So that's where Tsunami Robbie and I have our time watching him train athletes. And I'm guessing that there could be some Tsunami Bars laying around somewhere in your strength and conditioning facility. It's soft weight, live weight, and beautiful thing about it, it's really safe technology for the golf athlete. And speaking of athletes, I got to ask your belief in this. Do you this is a recruiting question now, do you like to recruit athletes and multi-sport stars, or do you like to recruit the ones that have been focused from the time they were in kindergarten competing just strictly in golf or somewhere in between?
So I would say if they're a multi-sport athlete, then I'm going to give them a little extra check mark. You know, I mean, obviously we're looking for scores and golf swings and fundamentals and things like that as well. But, you know, if they've got all that and they've also, you know, you can see that athleticism and, you know, they've played other sports. And, you know, I think there's a competitiveness that comes from playing a lot of other sports at a high level like that. And, you know, I think that gives guys an edge for sure. So when we're recruiting, yeah, it's a plus if you played other sports, and we're always looking for kind of athleticism anyway, because we're all trying to judge kind of a ceiling and where a golfer might be, you know, 2, 3, 4 years after you're watching them when they're in high school. And if they're athletic and playing other sports at a high level, it's a bonus for sure.
Well, I enjoyed watching, you know, Coach, I'll let you know, there are 2 G George Bryans, and you might have thought you were talking to 4, my oldest son, but I'm the 3rd, his daddy, and you and I did not play college.
I absolutely did. It took you this long to tell me this. I mean, my goodness. You could have told me this right off the bat. That's funny.
Hey, I wasn't trying to trick you, but I realized that you didn't have that background. And, man, I enjoyed watching you play golf. You are a strategist. You also a technician.
Thank you.
Hey, here's the thing that really was cool is you never spit the bit. You always just you kept going. You figured out a way to get your ball in the hole. And I enjoyed it. And so it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Would love to have you back. And congratulations on 13 years since the NCAAs. Is that what you just said, 2010?
That's right. 2010, yeah, 13 years since we've been there. So hopefully we can make it a more regular occurrence. But it's going to be a special couple weeks. We're looking forward to it.
We'll check back in with you, and thanks so much for joining us. Have yourself a good evening and a great weekend, and look forward to next time.
Thank you, George. Thanks, Robbie. Thanks, Phil. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Coach.
And hey, Tsunami Robbie? At night, and I'm going back to the golf course with my grandbabies. I got them, each of them have a club in their hand, and I'm having a blast. So until next time, you guys tee them high, but shoot them low.
George, thank you. Robbie, thank you. Coach, thank you. And nice being sneaky there, George. That was great. That was great. He thought he was talking to 4. He was talking to 3. That's great. You guys have a great weekend. We appreciate you very much. Let me mention here that Kentucky leads South Carolina 4-1. Charleston leads North Carolina A&T 9-4. Appalachian State leads Coastal 9-0. USC men's tennis team winner over South Carolina State in the NCAA regional. They advance. USC women's tennis team, they lose to Old Dominion in the first round, so they are done. Speaking of done, I am done because I am gone next week. You'll be in the very capable hands of Mr. Bergen, Mr. Daniel, and Mr. Matt Smith.
Yeah, looking forward to it next week. I hope you have a good time. and get some, you know, get a few rays before you come back in time for a Darlington weekend.
Yeah. Well, I've got the Copper Tone. I got the Speedo. I've got all I need. So you guys have fun. I'll be thinking about you, but not too much.
I understand totally.
All right.
And I wouldn't be thinking about us much either. So we won't be offended by that.
Everybody have a great weekend. Thank you for being with us. Take care. Guys, we'll see you next week.